Hey friends, Devin again for the Bardic Babble podcast, the show where we interview creators about the things that they create. On today's episode, we are joined by Emmy-nominated and awarded writer Ashley Warren. Ashley is not only a fellow Nevadan, but one of my personal inspirations. She created the RPG Writer Workshop, which aims to educate the next generation of tabletop RPG writers, and as you'll find out in the conversation, expand into some other writing endeavors. I have followed Ashley's endeavors in the tabletop RPG space for a while now, and I was very thankful that we were able to line up this interview. She was on my pick list pretty early on, so I hope you enjoy the episode. Be sure to head on over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and leave the show a rating or review. Makes me feel good when I get on there and I see a new review has popped up. So help me feel good in 2020. All joking aside, ratings and reviews help the show grow. So if you have an opportunity, head on over, leave a rating, leave a review, and help the show become a little bit bigger. And without further ado, we're going to take a quick ad break, and then we're going to go ahead and jump on over to Ashley. All right, welcome back, listeners. Today I have the mind behind ScribeMind, Ashley Warren, joining me today. Ashley, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad we were actually able to finally meet up and pin it down.
I know. It's been a few months in the making, so I appreciate your patience. I feel like this year has been just a little unpredictable for everyone, so.
It truly has. And then, I mean, not to mention you also, it's like every time I blink, you've got another project coming up and moving along. So I'm excited to dive into those. But to just kind of start us out, do you mind just doing a quick introduction, who you are, what is ScribeMind, and maybe a couple of things you're working on?
Perfect. So I'm Ashley Warren, and I'm a writer, educator, content strategist, among other things related to those. And ScribeMind is just my personal business. It encompasses the work I do with other writers, including research-related things. And most notably, what I do lately is narrative design. So I write content for Dungeons & Dragons, and that's been pretty much my focus for the last few years. So I would say that's my current emphasis, and probably, I think at this point, what I'm most known for. So that's definitely become a big passion of mine in general.
Awesome. So as my listeners know, we've been doing a run in tabletop RPG, and lately we've been focusing on businesses that use tabletop RPGs in their business models. So one of the things that I've been dying to chat with you about is the RPG Writer Workshop. It's growing. Every time I tune into it, it's growing hand over fist. So can you just kind of give us the origin story, how you came to the RPG Workshop?
Sure. So the RPG Writer Workshop began in the summer of 2018. At that time, I had been publishing one-shot adventures pretty regularly on Dungeon Masters Guild. I think I had been publishing at least one adventure per month for about like 5 months or so, I think starting in December of the year previous. And so at that point, I was just like kind of on a roll and just putting a lot of time and effort into writing D&D content and really enjoying it, and also really building a readership and an audience. And I just realized that it was something that I enjoyed doing. And I also realized that there weren't a lot of great educational resources that I felt were tailored to people who were interested in also writing adventure content. There's, of course, tons of YouTube channels, blogs, et cetera. It wasn't that there was a lack of information. It just wasn't really curated in a way that I felt was very approachable. And I know that I myself felt kind of lost looking through a lot of this content. Like, I didn't really know exactly what content was worth reading or following. And so I have a background in education. I used to teach college English, and that's what my master's degree is in. And so I have always loved working with writers in some capacity, developing curriculum. And I thought it was a good time to maybe put together a little workshop. And I called it a workshop because I really wanted it to be this kind of symbiotic learning environment where it wasn't just me teaching things, because at that point, I still was so new to narrative design and I was still learning a lot myself. But I wanted to basically better disseminate a lot of the information that I was consuming for other people's benefit and just make that feel a little bit more approachable and welcoming. So that's basically how that first workshop started. It was just a really simple email series. And I was only really expecting about, I don't know, 10 people or so to participate. And we ended up getting like 500 signups. So I was like, okay, there's definitely a need for a learning community around adventure design or tabletop writing in general, just a supportive community where people could ask questions and learn from one another and have a little bit more structure. Because I think that for aspiring or new writers, sometimes just telling someone to go to YouTube and watch videos is not very helpful. Sometimes people need a little bit more guidance than that. They need some structure, some deadlines, or they need to know what the actual starting point is, because it's not just enough to say, hey, go write something. It's like, well, I don't know really what to write. I don't know the structure of an adventure. I don't really know a lot about these things. So that's kind of the goal of the workshop, is to provide enough structure and support to help writers really get started. And then hopefully they'll feel excited and empowered to continue creating. And yeah, the workshop continues to grow. We just finished our Write Your First Adventure workshop in July. And we have another one coming up in November. And we have some other courses in our course catalog. And yeah, I mean, we have, I think, about 8,000 people in our community now, which is wild. It's been an interesting journey just seeing how many people really are interested in learning these things. And we're always growing and expanding our curriculum and trying to find new, you know, instructors and people to partner with who can really share their expertise. Because it's never my goal to position myself as an expert. I just am a passionate writer and educator and want to do my part to help and give back to the community. But I'm certainly not someone who knows everything about this topic whatsoever. That would be impossible. So yeah, that's kind of the general spiel on the workshop, but it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. So I actually partook in the Write Your Own Adventure for July. Again, whenever I get interested by a topic, I like diving in to the deepest end of the pool that I possibly can. So when I was going through the course, just checking everything out day by day, it's amazing, not only one, how it's very curriculum based. It's, you know, this week we're working on this, this week we're working on this, very guided. And then, of course, the amazing plethora of collaborators that you have on there for accessibility, inclusivity, and everything like that. So you've kind of led the way, and I know that's kind of a big banner to put on top of you, with inclusivity and with accessibility. A lot of the bigger companies aren't necessarily making very big strides in doing that. So when you are starting to build your list of workshop writers for accessibility, inclusivity, is there any kind of mean and method to that? Or are you just looking for individuals who really have what we would consider an expertise in that field, tandem with a writing or D&D specific background?
Well, I would say it's a little bit of both. I mean, I feel very fortunate that my creative community is pretty organically diverse. I have lots of friends and collaborators from all walks of life, all backgrounds, and we come together to make cool things. And so I feel very fortunate in that sense that I have a lot of creative friends who have expertise in things that I don't, and who are interested in helping with the workshop and contributing their expertise. When it comes to accessibility, that was actually not originally part of the first workshop. I wish it had been. It was definitely an oversight on my part, but that was partly why we added it to the workshop, because that is an aspect of creating, you know, content that is often overlooked. And rather than making it an afterthought of, oh, I made this thing, now how can I make it accessible? It's including that in the process from the get-go. And that is definitely something that I had to learn and be better about doing. And I think that having that lesson be a part of the workshop early on in the curriculum is really important, so that people are always thinking about accessibility as they're creating things and not just as the thing to tack on to the end. Because as creators, it's better for us when more people can partake in our work. And I think that's part of fostering an inclusive community. So I will say that I certainly can't take all the credit for that whatsoever. It's just a matter of people seeing what the goal of the workshop is and believing in helping, you know, writers get started and trying to figure out, you know, what skills writers need in this era. And accessibility is definitely one of those. And I mean, inclusivity is a big topic, and I can only really speak to aspects of those. I am a woman, but I'm also white, so I can't necessarily represent every single person in the community, of course. And so I try to always extend opportunities to other people in the community who have different, you know, experiences and can share that with our community and also just have different areas of expertise. And I think that when organizations in general are more diverse, everyone benefits from that. So that's certainly a goal for the workshop, is to make sure that our, you know, instructors aren't just, you know, all the same people who look exactly the same as one another and aren't just representing, you know, one perspective. We have lots of perspectives being represented, because with narrative design, there's not just one clear approach. There's no one avenue that is like the best way to become a narrative designer. There's no one way to write an awesome adventure. There's lots of different paths. And so it's always our goal to try to represent that as much as possible. But I would say it's kind of a give and take. It's definitely a priority of mine to ensure that I feel like I'm approaching great instructors and giving them, you know, opportunities or inviting them to be a part of that and sharing, giving them a platform really. But also it's kind of, I don't know, it's been mostly organic, which I think is really nice. But there's always more I could be doing as the director to make sure that our organization is more diverse, because our community creator certainly is, and our creator communities, excuse me. And I think it's important that when we are sharing educational knowledge, that it's not from this kind of traditional, almost like academic ivory tower perspective. It's, you know, it's reflective of the community, and it's reflective of people who are actually making content for RPGs. So yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily one clear answer. I will say that we try to invite new instructors to participate all the time, and we have new courses that we're planning, and there's just lots of ways for people to get involved. And of course, you know, there's always a matter of ensuring that we're compensating people fairly, and we're not ever, you know, taking advantage of people's contributions and time and expertise. So it's just, I don't know, it's kind of ever evolving.
Well, you use the word oversight when mentioning the first workshop, and especially diving into something new and as vast and almost limitless that this is, it's great that you made those pivots and you've made those changes. I mean, you've said some of my favorite keywords, fairly compensated and, you know, along the lines of. So when we start looking towards the future of the RPG Writers Workshop and the other classes that you are planning, can you speak to a couple of the ones that you're planning?
Sure. So actually, kind of the big thing that we're planning is pivoting away from just being like an RPG workshop and more focusing on storytelling as an interactive and immersive medium. So actually, that's kind of a rebrand we're doing like early next year. So the goal with that is, of course, to still focus on tabletop RPGs. That's definitely still the biggest part of our community and what our flagship courses will continue to be. But we also want to expand our course catalog to cover things like writing your first comic book, or writing an audio drama, or, you know, other types of really creative fiction, because what we've found is that our community is very interested in really the future of storytelling. And I think RPGs are a huge part of that, of course. And narrative design, I think, really is the future of storytelling. So that will continue to be our focus, and we'll continue to develop courses specifically to those topics. But we also have some kind of bigger picture things planned. So I'm really excited about that, because I think it all really fits together. And usually when people are interested in, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, are also interested in these other things as well. So my hope is that writers will be excited about all the different mediums that are available to them. But when it comes to RPG content, there's still so many courses we have planned that we want to focus on for that. Cartography and layout design, and more, I would guess, or not guess, I would say like higher level narrative design theory. Because with the RPG Writer Workshop, our Write Your First Adventure course is very much a beginner's course. It's very much like a primer. It's an overview to a lot of different aspects of adventure design, but it doesn't cover every single thing, and it doesn't go into too much detail, just because we want to get people started. And the hope is that once they get started, they'll be more excited to continue, and then can really delve into more of the high level theory about game design and narrative design in general. So that's definitely something that we want to do more of. Something that I'm excited about is our TTRPG book club, reading club, because what I personally believe, and what our instructors also believe, is that the more you read, the better of a writer you become. And a lot of people don't really read enough of the content that they want to write. And the more you read tabletop games, the better understanding you have of the many different ways that you can write a game. And it's not just about Dungeons and Dragons either. There's so many game systems that you can write for as an aspiring narrative designer. And so we want to really get people in the habit of reading all the different game rules and systems that are out there, to just constantly be thinking of new ideas and to know that there's a lot of options for them. So that'll be something fun that hopefully we'll have going into the next couple months. So yeah, I mean, that's just like a few things, but there's just always so many ideas and so many programs that we have in mind. It's just a matter of time and money and resources to get all these things off the ground.
Totally. So now you mentioned additional tabletop RPG systems. Are you going to be like partnering with them to get their like their ash cans, their primers, the condensed version of the rule sets for those?
Yeah, so we're still trying to figure out exactly what we want to read, how we want to facilitate that. Really, it'll be kind of like how book clubs kind of operate online anyway. Like, we're all going to read this particular game for, you know, the next month or so. Here's some, you know, discussion questions, you know, hop into our Discord and let's talk about this and really break this down. And there's so many games that are available, including games that are free. We're definitely interested in making sure that games are accessible and approachable for people price point wise, so that people don't feel like they have to buy a $50 game every month. So there's lots of considerations there. But luckily, lots of games fit the bill for that. And there's a lot of independent games that are available that we can also read through and support. And those don't have to, you know, break the bank. So yeah, I mean, we have a long list of games that we are thinking about, you know, including as part of our reading club. It's just a matter of getting all that set up and seeing how the community feels about it.
Fantastic. Now, before we pivot away from the workshop, how rewarding of a feeling is it to see on August 1st, when everybody starts putting all their stuff up on the DMs Guild or DriveThru, wherever they're publishing to, how rewarding of a feeling is that for you specifically? I don't want to ask for your whole team, to see the contributions from the community at large.
Oh, it's incredible. It's something that never gets old. It's always so exciting and like kind of moving. Like, it's like very touching to see people really take their first step into this new creative endeavor. And we also have a lot of returning students as well who publish their second, third, fourth, et cetera, adventures as part of the workshop. And it's always great to know that the workshop has played a role in, you know, these people's writing careers. And so, yeah, it's super exciting. And it's the energy around that day is always really fun because people feel, you know, really accomplished. And even if people don't finish their adventure within the month, because, you know, a month goes by really quickly and, you know, people have different goals in mind, there's still kind of this general sense of accomplishment that I think everyone feels when the workshop wraps up, just because everyone, you know, has dedicated a month to learning something new. And I think that's always really rewarding no matter what. But yeah, it's a joy to see all the titles flooding these online publishing platforms and knowing that the workshop has played a role in that. It's awesome.
That's cool. Yeah, because you could be catapulting the next you without even really knowing it.
Hopefully they will be better than me in every way.
All right. So now I want to pivot into the things that you've helped contribute to. I'm learning the language.
Nice.
So the two big ones coming up soon is Frostmaiden, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Rime of the Frostmaiden.
And then Hecna. So let's just...
Yes.
We'll start with Frostmaiden and just, you know, how did you contribute to it? What was the, you know, your overall experience with it? Just kind of speak to it for a minute or two.
Sure. So I feel incredibly lucky to have, the term is co-authored, the next official Dungeons and Dragons book, Icewind Dale, Rime of the Frostmaiden, which comes out at the time of recording, it comes out next week on September 15th. And that was basically a dream come true. I haven't necessarily like played Dungeons and Dragons my whole life, but I've always been really passionate about fantasy. And I've always found D&D very just interesting and intriguing. And so to be able to contribute to this kind of like cultural, you know, I guess zeitgeist is really awesome. And just to be part of like the D&D legacy is really rewarding, especially for a setting like Icewind Dale, which for many D&D fans is a classic iconic setting. There's a lot of really notable adventures and characters that are set there. And so my contributions were kind of varying. I wrote one of the main chapters, which is pretty common when people contribute to these books. You're given, you know, certain assignments for what you can write. And so I wrote, a whole chapter. I wrote a bunch of smaller adventures toward the beginning of the book, and then some other content spread throughout. So I feel like anyone who collaborates on a book like that, I feel like contributes pretty equal parts to it, which is really cool. So I feel like we all, contribute pretty substantial, word counts to it. So and I feel like the chapters that I got to work on were really exciting and challenging, but in a good way. And I'm really excited. I can't wait to see the actual book. I haven't gotten it yet. So I'm very eager to see what it all, turned out to be in its entirety.
Very cool. So just out of curiosity, what was your word count contribution for it?
I don't remember because it's been a while since I worked on this project. I think I turned in my final drafts over a year ago or about a year ago. So, these things are in progress for a long time. Like books are worked on, years in advance. So, I honestly don't remember. And I don't know. It's also hard to say, I don't know what it turns out to be like after editing and all that. I don't know. I truly can't say what it was. I also don't know if I'm allowed to say now that I'm thinking about NDA. So I don't.
That's fair.
But
that's
I truly fair. Don't remember, honestly. So I don't know. Sorry that I can't provide fair more enough insight there. But I feel like it was, it's a fairly substantial contribution along with, the other writers. I feel like we have equal contributions to that.
So now the one that you're working on at the time of recording September 9th is Hecna. And just looking at the Kickstarter, that number's not stopping. It's just the wheel is spinning at $110,000. So what is Hecna? What is the project? Who are you working with? And all that stuff.
Sure. So Hecna is a dark carnival campaign setting. This project is in conjunction with Hit Point Press, who has also worked on the Humblewood game, which is a very popular game. And all of these are designed for Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition using the Open Gaming License. So Hecna is the titular character in this new setting. And he is kind of it clown versus, or I guess meets Beetlejuice inspired. He's definitely this wily clown figure. But my goal was to make him a little bit unique in his aesthetic and design, but he's definitely recognizable in terms of his personality as being one of those kind of trickster clowns. And so the Hecna campaign setting is set in this dark carnival called the Revelia, and the Revelia is overseen by Hecna, this clown figure. And the kind of tone and atmosphere of Hecna is very much Tim Burton meets 80s, campy 80s movies meets kind of Victorian era sideshows. It's this kind of amalgamation of different influences to be this kind of weird new fantasy setting. It's very much a fantasy setting, but it brings all these influences together from other, classic circus and carnival type, media, which is really fun because those are all my favorite things anyway. So basically this whole book was just a mashup of all the things that I really love. Which made it really fun to write because I got to really infuse all those things that I've enjoyed for years and years. And yeah, the Kickstarter has been a wild ride so far. It just started yesterday and I think it funded in an hour, which is
incredible.
Wild. I have been a part of Kickstarters before, which have been, successful, but this one is on its own level. And right. Hit Point Press, they just have a great track record of Kickstarters. They also create Humblewood, and that raised $1 million, which is wild. And they've done, the Deck of Many, which are the animated cards, and they just they have just this amazing catalog of work that they've created, and they have just amazing attention to detail and art, and their vision for art is just always amazing. And it's really cool as a writer to be able to come up with ideas and concepts and creatures and characters in a setting, and then have them take those ideas and really make them into, art and real things. So that's been super rewarding because I've been fortunate to work on lots of projects, but to be as involved in that part of the process has been really cool because that's kind of new for me. I don't always do original creature design. And so I got to do a lot of that for Hecna, which was really cool. And also just, writing the setting and writing the adventures and really bringing a book to life from, just a very basic outline has been really cool. So yeah, it's been a good learning experience. I've never written a campaign book like in its entirety before. So that's been really cool because, you know, obviously it's really awesome working on projects like Frost Maiden, but you are given more information at that point when you're working on an official D&D book. Like the story has already really been determined. And even though you get to really contribute some awesome things to it, you're still working within, you know, these existing parameters. So working on a project like Hecna, which, you know, Hit Point Press had some ideas and some concepts they wanted to include, but it was really like, you know, take this and run with it. So that's been really cool. I mean, every writer wants an opportunity like that for sure.
Right. So now did they just out of the blue approach you for the project, Hit Point?
So I had been corresponding with Hit Point Press, I mean, for a while before Hecna even started. I had worked on a project and produced a project called The Uncaged Anthology, which was became again another much bigger project than I anticipated. But that was a DM's Guild project that ended up being more popular than I expected. And so once Uncaged was really, you know, going and kind of establishing an interesting reputation in the community, I was reached out to by different publishing companies and different people to work on different projects. And Hit Point had approached me just because they also enjoyed Uncaged, which was really cool. And they asked me if I wanted to work on this project called Hecna. And this is something that they had been kind of working on for a couple years at that point. They had some like ideas. I think they had made some spell cards for it. Like they had all these like kind of cool ideas for it, but it just wasn't a full book yet. So yeah, they asked me if I would be interested in writing something like that. And I was like, yes, because I love carnivals and circuses. And I think when they mentioned Beetlejuice, who was like a big influence for the Hecna character, I was like, I'm so in, because I love Beetlejuice. And I love like that kind of like silly meets spooky genre is like my like favorite. That's totally my jam. That's been like something I've loved since I was a kid. So once I said that, I was like, yeah, I'm sold. I'm in. And then, yeah, we just kind of went from there. And I was really excited that they approached me because I am a fan of the work that they do. And I knew that if I did this project with them, it would, you know, turn out to be really cool. And they'd probably come up with some really cool, you know, props and items, which they totally did. Like all the things that are included in the Kickstarter are like so awesome. And like all the minis, it's like, man, it's so cool. It's like, I couldn't really have asked for a better partner.
That's awesome. Now, I might have missed it. What exactly is your role in the Hecna product?
Sure. So I am titled the lead writer, which I feel kind of sheepish saying, because it's like, yeah, I'm the lead writer on this book, but that is technically my title. And I guess it's technically true, but it always feels weird, you know, just like declaring that. But yeah, that is my role. I'm the lead author, lead writer. So I did write the bulk of the book, but of course, this whole thing is a team effort. And I worked really closely with my editor, T.R. Rowe, who also wrote and, you know, we, you know, collaborated on, you know, many sections of the book. So none of these things are ever done in a vacuum, of course. So I would say like word count wise, like I'm definitely the lead writer, but in terms of like the ideas, like that was definitely a group effort. And we're always constantly going back and forth on concepts and, you know, adding some new cool things. So yeah, I mean, I'm very grateful to have played, you know, such a big role in this project. I have co-authored other projects before, but this one was a big one for me.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So now you also spoke a little bit about creature creation and, you know, how new and interesting that is. I'm just on the Kickstarter right now and I'm looking at, you know, the clown thralls, the schnozzlings. Can you speak to a couple of the creatures that you ideated into life for the product?
Yeah, sure. So a couple of those were like ideas that Hit Point had already had. They basically, when I came on board, they basically sent me this like Google Doc that had, you know, an outline and some kind of preliminary creature concept. So I think the schnozzling was on that list. But yeah, there was quite a few that I contributed, including there's like these were spider creatures that are kind of like they're were folk, but they're spiders. So they're like, you know, spider people, but they're acrobats, which I thought was really fun because that made a lot of sense that they would be able to do really complex acrobatics with their, you know, spider abilities. And I think my favorite creatures are the marionettes, which are, I love puppets and toys. And I have since I was a little kid. I don't know why I just have this like obsession with like puppetry and things like that. I just, I think I was like a puppet maker in a past life or something, but I just think they're really fun because they're so theatrical. And so I was like, we have to have marionettes be a, you know, a big part of this campaign. And so, yeah, they're like awakened marionettes in the sense that they are somewhat sentient versions of marionettes, but they play lots of different roles in the Revelia. So characters will encounter them in different places. And I think those are really fun because they each have like kind of their own distinct personality and their own like style, but they're very much like they're still puppets. And, you know, Hecna is like the ultimate puppet master. So really everyone at the Revelia is under the control of Hecna, but especially the marionettes, which are fun. And let's see, I'm trying to think of some other creatures. There's like the children of the candy corn, which are basically these like, they're not children. They look like children because they have these like weird masks on, but they're actually like aberrations. So if they remove their mask, they're like, you know, these horrific aberrations. So, and they're very like mischievous. And so those, they're a lot of fun because they're basically like the children in Nightmare Before Christmas. Yeah. And I'm like, I love Tim Burton, everything Tim Burton. Nightmare Before Christmas was a huge influence for me for this book. And so I think that's, I think a good way to think about those particular creatures. I don't know. There's so many.
But what I love about these kind of products, especially out of teams like Hit Point, is you can feel the inspirations. I saw, you know, the Children of the Candy Corn. And the first thought was, oh, it's the, you know, the D&D version of the kids from Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm-hmm. So it's very cool that, you know, especially on the smaller presses, where you can feel those influences that you don't necessarily get in D&D or Pathfinder or things like that. So very cool. Kudos to you and your team. I'm so stoked for this product. And I am not a horror fan.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. I'm excited to see how all the fun like props and additional you know, the minis and all the fun stuff that comes with it will turn out, because I think it'll be really cool. And Hit Point Press, like, they just make beautiful products. So I know it'll be great. Yeah.
They truly do. Like, just the art on the Revelia box set, like, I want to buy it just for that art.
Yeah, it's stunning. It's cool because, like, I saw, you know, some of the art as it was in progress, but it's, like, it's amazing, like, having come, like, I was very fortunate to come up with like Hecna's look and aesthetic, and to like basically come up with like, you know, that whole look, and then see it brought to life by these incredible artists is just really rewarding.
So then you also mentioned, start pivoting away from Hecna and stuff like that, you mentioned the Uncaged anthology. Let's just like, what is it? What was your role in it? And then we'll start picking away towards those ennies.
Sure. So Uncaged is a collection of adventures written for D&D 5e, and it's a 4-book series. And each adventure subverts the tropes surrounding a classic figure from mythology or folklore, specifically with a feminist twist. So all the creatures, or at least the vast majority of the creatures, are female like monsters or figures that have been, you know, portrayed in myths and folklore around the world, most notably like Medusa, hags, harpies, you know, all the good ones. And so Uncaged is, yeah, just a collection of adventures written by authors from around the world. It was a global collaboration. I think more than 100 people were involved, and we published 3 volumes last year and the 4th volume earlier this year, which seems like a million years ago now. It was in the before COVID times, which is like a different era at this point. And yeah, it's been an awesome project. It's published on Dungeon Masters Guild. And my role, I founded the project and I also produced the project. And I have an adventure in volume 2, but mostly my role was overseeing the project. I did the layout design as well. And just made sure that it was brought to life, keeping all of the schedules and everything on track, but also project managing more than 100 people, which I will never do ever again. But it was a good learning experience. So that's kind of the gist of what Uncaged is.
Nice. And it's an adamantine bestseller over on the DMs Guild as well. So what led you to Uncaged? Because it's a very, very unique concept. And, you know, especially when you guys were first starting to put them out, I hate to use the word controversial, but especially within the space, a very white male dominated space, we can use the word controversial here.
Sure. So at the time when I came up with the idea for Uncaged, I had been, you know, writing a lot of adventures for Dungeon Masters Guild. This was actually right after the first RPG Writer Workshop. So I had quite a few titles under my belt. And every time I would start a new adventure, I would first look through the Monster Manual because I was always really inspired by the creatures that I could include in my adventures. And it was just a fun way to just determine a lot of, you know, things about the adventure, the main kind of story points and potential boss battle and things like that. And as I was looking through the Monster Manual, I was like, wow, there's so many cool like female creatures, like things that I really recognize, most notably Medusa, who is like one of my favorite figures from Greek mythology already, even though her origin story is actually quite tragic and usually kind of misrepresented. And I was like, you know, D&D is such a great way to kind of retell some of these stories because it's interactive. People don't have to just, you know, kill every creature that they meet. Or if they do, there's still things that they can learn about these creatures. Like it's a little bit more nuanced than that. It's interactive. It's not like reading a book of Greek mythology where it's just this passive activity. You're actually, you know, meeting these creatures in your game. It's like meeting these mythology creatures in real life, essentially. And so I thought like this was such a great opportunity to maybe retell these stories or at least portray these creatures in a different way, not necessarily making them all, you know, good or favorable, but just, you know, giving them a chance to, you know, have a different story told. And so my original thought was just to write a trilogy of adventures. I was just going to write one, I think, on Medusa, one on like a hag, and then one on a harpy. Just those were like the creatures that I had picked. And then I was like, there's so many more than that in the Monster Manual. And D&D like creature design is really rooted in folklore and mythology. Like there's a reason that these creatures are so interesting is because we recognize them. So I was like, well, it would be cool if like this was like a collaborative project. Cause I bet that like maybe some other people would be interested in writing some of their own adventures about these creatures. And we can put together a little book of like 10 adventures was my original thought. And so I just like shared the idea on Twitter and it blew up and I was like, oh dear. Okay. Well, there's definitely a lot of interest in this idea. And so I basically set up kind of an informal call for submissions. And I was like, here's what I'm thinking. You know, if you want to submit your idea, like, here's how to do this and we can put together a book. Well, I got so many submissions and they were all like so incredible. And they were so many of the submissions were from people who had never written D&D content before. And they were people from, you know, marginalized communities who didn't necessarily know if they would be welcome to write adventures for D&D. Because as you mentioned, like, it is a community that even though people of all backgrounds have been a part of the community for decades, that's not always how it's portrayed in, you know, popular media. And so I think there was, even if that's, you know, true, that, I mean, I think, you know, women especially have been playing D&D since for as long as it's been around, but that hasn't always been what we see, you know, who we see playing D&D. Like it has, you know, a reputation for being for a certain type of person. And so when I was getting all these submissions, I was like, okay, this project is definitely more than what I thought it could be. It's like, now it's like, this is a way to introduce all of these new people to the community. It's like, we, you know, can put together a project that basically like kickstarts a lot of these writers, you know, careers, and which has been incredible. And so it just kind of spiraled from there and became a multi-book series because we just had so many submissions and it just became this like amazing community. And then of course, like when we had writers come on board, then artists wanted to contribute. And then, you know, people wanted to help and edit and, you know, do other aspects of that process. And then we just kind of went from there. And I had project managed other, you know, projects in the past. I used to edit literary journals. And so putting together a project like this wasn't totally new for me, but the scope of it was definitely new because it was bigger than anything I had ever done before. More people, bigger books, like literally the books are quite thick. And so, I mean, I think with all four books, it's more than like 1,000 pages of content. And so, yeah, it just became a big project. I spent a year and a half doing that. It pretty much consumed so many of my both waking and sleeping hours. And yeah, but it's been really special. And I do agree that in some ways it was a little controversial. I would say for the most part, the reception of Uncaged has been overwhelmingly positive. Like we've had just so much support. It is, you know, all four volumes are bestsellers on DM's Guild. Like people play adventures from it all the time. There's been stream games. I mean, it really, the response was so enthusiastic. But of course, you know, some people did come out of the woodwork and accuse us of ruining D&D, which is something that I'm proud of being accused of. Because like, you know, come at me, bro. And also just like mad that we would include, you know, queer people in the adventures. It's like, okay, well, queer people exist, and also queer people wrote some of these adventures. And so it's fair for them to include their experiences and the content that they write. Like, it's just, we did get, you know, some pushback in those, you know, ways, but that was pretty few and far between. And I will say, like, for the most part, when those kinds of things would come up, the community really backed us up and, you know, continued to say, like, it's important that we have, you know, projects like this that, you know, feature so many new voices and so many new perspectives. And yeah, it's just, it's been great. And I think that there has been a little bit of a ripple effect in the community, you know, not just because of Uncaged. And I certainly don't attribute that to me. It's just our community is so big and so, you know, unique that it just kind of, that started to happen naturally, because a lot of people who contributed to Uncaged went on to start their own projects, and they went on to, you know, lead their own anthologies and get opportunities in other aspects of, you know, the narrative design industry. So that has been, you know, just an awesome kind of byproduct of Uncaged. But yeah, I mean, it was a really positive thing overall though, which is good.
It's awesome. And that's, so at least from my perspective, a lot of the times when, you know, and I'm doing air quotes here, just because we used the word before, controversial, when products like this or, oh God, I forget J Dragon's, the first one, Sleepaway Camp, and like things like Wander Home and things like that, it's a very, very thin line of opposition. It's generally, you know, just a couple of dudes that, you know, they're gonna die on the hill, they're gonna die on. But then, you know, once the projects get rolling, the combat wheelchair is another great one. You see a couple bits of, oh gosh, this is ruining D&D, and then the tens of thousands of people behind them that, you know, this is what they wanted. This is something new and inventive and exciting. And it's great being able to see those things, especially in the anthologies. I don't know if you ever read Niyeti Okafor's story about the dumpster monster in Star Wars. She was a part of an anthology where she gave a whole story background to the dumpster monster in A New Hope. So it was very interesting. And after I read that, I went on a dive for more stories like the Star Wars from a certain point of view. And that's how I came upon Uncaged. And I'm very proud of you guys and your team for four. You're at four now?
Yes, we published four volumes, four big tomes.
That's awesome. Are you guys looking at doing more of those in the future?
So we have talked about doing a fifth volume, which would actually be all like high level adventures, like all like basically for levels like 15 to 20, which would be fun because the focus of that would be goddesses. So like goddesses in the, you know, Forgotten Realms or just general D&D, you know, pantheon and settings, because there's just not a lot of adventure content that's designed for those high levels. And that would be a really cool opportunity to retell some of the stories about the female goddesses in the pantheon, because some of them are a little, they've been portrayed differently over the years. Like there's one Umberly who has kind of an unfavorable subtitle, which is, you know, that she would be an interesting one because she's like the evil sea queen. But she has a title that calls her, you know, the B word. I don't know if I can swear on your podcast. Well, she's called, I think, the bitch queen as well, which is kind of like, could be empowering, depends on how you feel about that word, or it could be derogatory. So, but she's, it's like, is she evil? She's representing this element, which is, you know, the ocean, which isn't inherently evil. It's just, you know, unpredictable. And so if you're a woman who's unpredictable, you're sometimes called a bitch. Whether that's a good or bad thing. And I don't want to say, you know, I know lots of, you know, people feel differently about that word, but it's just, that's just one example of how, you know, goddesses have been portrayed kind of inconsistently over the years. And even Oral from, you know, the Frost Maiden, from Rime of the Frost Maiden, some of her forms in the upcoming book were kind of controversial because one of her forms is called, you know, Winter's Womb. And, you know, referring to just a part of, you know, a woman's body and like making it kind of dehumanizing it has been a thing that's happened in literature for, you know, thousands of years. And so a lot of people had kind of mixed feelings on that portrayal of this like female goddess. Like, is that, you know, disrespectful? Is it problematic? Is it cool that it's embracing, you know, the feminine aspects of this creature? Or is it that her feminine aspects are also what make her evil? You know, so there's all these like nuances and things like that. And there's not necessarily one correct interpretation, but it's just, it's been interesting to see those kinds of dialogues. So our goal was with Uncaged Goddesses was to, you know, feature a notable goddess in each adventure and do like really epic big adventures. That's something that I would still like to do. It's just a matter of really planning out that new volume. And our community is just like, we're so busy with so many projects now, which is a good thing. I mean, I'm so happy that other Uncaged contributors are just really crushing it. Like, they have all these amazing opportunities making really cool things. And so it's okay that, you know, that we haven't really gotten to that yet, because it means that we're all so busy making cool stuff. So yeah, I think that maybe in the future we will do that. And it would also be cool to give other people a chance to contribute to Uncaged, because a lot of folks wanted to find ways to get involved. But it's just a matter of, you know, having the time to do these things. Doing Uncaged really did take up about a year and a half of my life. And it's been kind of nice to move on to other things, as wonderful as I think it's been to work on that. Like, sometimes it's time to move on to the new projects. And, you know, Hecna has been awesome, and Frost Maiden, and, you know, all these other things I've been able to do have been very rewarding.
So just to kind of round us out for the entirety of the interview, you recently won a Silver Ennie for the Writer's Workshop, if I am remembering correctly. And if I'm also remembering correctly, this isn't your first Ennie that you won. What other Ennies have you been able to secure? And I guess I should actually preface, for the listeners that don't know, the Ennies are a community-contributed awards every year for products within the tabletop RPG space.
Correct. Yeah. So, and the Ennies, yeah, they've been around for a while and are kind of, we don't have a lot of awards really in our industry, in our community, which is, I think, interesting. And I know there's maybe talk of other people starting some new ones, so we'll see. But for now, the Ennies are it's been pretty cool to be, you know, part of that legacy now as well. So yeah, so this year we actually, I won two Ennie awards. So one was a Silver Ennie for the RPG Writer Workshop, and one was a Silver Ennie for Uncaged Volume 3, which was great. And then last year, I didn't win any, but I was nominated for Uncaged Volume 1. And also for my solo adventure, The Executioner's Daughter, was nominated last year as well. So I've been nominated twice, and then I won twice this year, which is awesome and still surreal. I have my Annies hanging up behind me. But yeah, that was really cool, because the Annies, they're kind of an interesting award in that you submit work that you want to be considered, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee that it'll be considered or nominated, because the judges select the nominations and they have to go through, you know, hundreds of submissions. So it feels really special to actually get to the nomination stage, because it means that you've made it through. The judges have, you know, identified your work among hundreds and hundreds of submissions. And then when you win one, it's really special because it means that the community has voted for you, because that's basically the format of the Ennies. You're nominated and then they vote, the community votes. And so for both the workshop and Uncaged to receive Ennies is really special, because it means that the community supports these projects and believes that they are worthy of earning awards. And yeah, it was great. I feel incredibly honored. I mean, both the workshop and Uncaged are, you know, things I do in conjunction with other people. And so I'm grateful to anyone who's helped with both of those, because I consider those wins to be wins for everyone who's been involved in those. So anyone who participated in Uncaged Volume 3 is now an Ennie Award winner. And same with, you know, all of our instructors who helped with the workshop. So yeah, it's great. It's always special to be recognized by the community.
And the recognition was duly earned. You guys, in all of the projects that you have your thumbprint on, they're incredibly progressive projects. They're just having an educational tool in the tabletop RPG space. I don't think people realize how awesome that is, and how forward thinking that is. And selfless is the other key word. And that's a tribute of your educational background. You're teaching for the teaching's sake and not for necessarily the financial sake. Really, that's all the questions that I have. It was amazing to finally get the opportunity to sit down and just chat with you about these projects. I look forward to the thousands of other projects that I will undoubtedly see from you, from ScribeMind, and the teams that you work with. So thank you again, Ashley, for coming and jumping on the show and talking about the different things that you've worked on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we finally made this work and we're able to find time to chat.
Me too. All right. So if you are not following Ashley on the social media sphere, where can we find you?
Sure. So the best place is my website, which is www.scribemind.com. Just the words scribe and mind smooshed together. And the RPG Writer Workshop is at rpgwriterworkshop.com. If we do change our domain or our branding early next year, you'll be notified well in advance. So for now, you can just go to RPG Writer Workshop and you'll find our current open courses. And our next Write Your First Adventure course is in November. And so registration for that will open in October. And you can also find me on Twitter at Ashley N. H. Warren. And there's links to, you know, other things there as well. So those are probably the best places to find me. You can also find me at ScribeMind Studio on Instagram. But basically, my website has links to everything.
Perfect. Awesome. And, you know, other than that, I think we're good. You have yourself a lovely rest of your day.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.